Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming out on Hanukkah. This is the last of our series on the Shabbos Kitchen, A User's Guide. And I want to thank everybody for coming. Please, God, already, hopefully in the next couple of days, all of the other classes and this one will be online. So if you missed them, you can calm your guilty conscience by listening to previous classes. For the past 4 sessions, spread out over 6 weeks, the past 4 weeks we have been talking pretty much exclusively about one melacha, one of the forbidden categories of labor. We've talked about bishul, about cooking. We talked about the various different permutations whereby a person is permitted to heat up food on Shabbos, and the different ways, you know, we talked about hanacha and hachazara and all the shahiyah, all these different fancy terms. And I want to apologize. There are a bunch of terms to know today, but our printer is on the fritz. So I'll be happy to send a dictionary of terms out to you if you send me an email saying that you want one. Otherwise, I just won't know who did and who didn't and who was here. So please send me an email if you would like a dictionary of terms that we spoke about, that we will speak about today. In this last class, we're going to cram in another 4 melachas that are all related to one another. We talked about last time, or at the very beginning of the series, we talked about how the melachos of Shabbos are ordered based on different processes of labor that were carried out in the Mishkan. So, for example, there's a whole bunch of melachos that are related to the actual building of the Mishkan. There's cutting wood, there's makeh patish, the nailing things together, those kinds of things. Then there's a whole series of melachos that are related to tanning hide that were used for different and actually slaughtering animals which was done frequently in the Mishkan. So there are things relating to tanning hide, things relating to killing animals and cooking those animals, and so on. And then there is a category we talked of what was called Sidura Depat, which is the order relating to bread. And many of the melachos that actually come up in the Shabbos kitchen that are not cooking are related to various aspects of making bread. There are 4 of them, 4 melachos. Number one is what's called the melacha of dash, that is threshing. What is threshing? For those of us who live in urban environments and are not in touch with agriculture, threshing is detaching food matter from its husk, whether it is corn from the cob or wheat from the stalk. And then we separate the kernels from the stalk or the chaff. It used to be that threshing was done in a, if maybe you've seen, in some places it still is done like this. Threshing is done, you have an animal walk over the surface of a granary or a threshing floor where there's grain on the floor and there's a wide board that is dragged over it, and attached to the board is usually some kind of blade. And that blade separates the kernels from the stalks. So if you have in your mind an image of a stalk of wheat, and you should, because there are 7 of them at the beginning of this week's parsha. So if you have in your mind an image of a stalk of wheat, you have the stalk, and then you have the kernels of wheat that come off of it. So the purpose of threshing is to separate those kernels from the stalk. That's how it used to be done. And that is the melacha of dash, threshing. Then you had the stalk, so you have the wheat, and you have, which is the actual wheat part, and then you have the chaff, which is all the other stuff, the husk that you don't need. So they had to be separated, and that is called winnowing. And the term, the Hebrew term for winnowing is zoreh, which is where you would throw. You ever seen this? You throw the stalks in the air, and the wind blows away the chaff, and the heavier kernels fall back to the ground. That is zoreh. Then you still have. You have the individual kernels, but they are mixed in with all sorts of other schmutz, whether it is stones or dirt or the occupational hazards of having animals do this action, right? So there you have to separate those the kernels from all the other schmutz. This is what's called borer. And finally, once you have the individual kernel, you have to separate the bran from the other stuff that you don't need, and that's done with a sieve, and that's called miraked. Miraked is from the language of rikud, where dancing, and that's kind of what you're doing. You put the kernels on the sieve, and you're moving it up and down, and that separates all the stuff that you don't need from the stuff that you want. So these are four melachos that are relevant to the process of separation. Just as an aside, and these are four prohibited melachos, prohibited categories of labor on Shabbos. Why is it so important, just to step back, why is it so important that we avoid separating things on Shabbos? Any of these are all about separating different component parts. Each step is separating further. Why is that so important? Rav Eliezer Melamed, whom I've quoted in the past, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Har Bracha Yeshiva, in his introduction to the Melachos, to this set of Melachos, writes that, in essence, what we're doing all week in our work lives, in our professional lives, in our everyday lives, we're engaging in acts of separation and discernment. Hopefully, we engage in acts of discernment. Many times, people are not so good at separating. But that is really what everybody does. And we're separating the good from the bad, what the deals that we want to do, or the patients that we want to see, and the path of treatment that we want to engage in. Everything that we're doing is an act of separating and an act of deciding. And on Shabbos, we want to avoid doing that. Shabbos is the Yom Shekulo Tov. So we're not separating on Shabbos. Shabbos, we have to do things a little bit differently than the way we do them during the week. So with this in mind, let's talk about the most common melacha, or perhaps the one that is most talked about, that comes up in your Shabbos kitchen, aside from, of course, Bishul, which we spend several weeks talking about. And that is borer. What is borer? Borer, as we mentioned, is the act of separating what we call ochel, which is food, and psolet, which is not food. Psolet is, you could say that it's junk, but let's define it as what you don't want to eat. So what is that? And this is a very important distinction. Are you separating food in a manner of eating or in a manner of work? We call it derech achila or derech milacha. And this is really the main distinction when it comes to borer in your Shabbos kitchen. Separating out the waste from food, that is the manner of milacha. Because if you think about it, right, when you are, let's say that you are working in a factory that packages legumes or beans and so what are you doing? You're not separating out the good beans from the bad beans. You are separating out the bad beans from the good. You're taking out the ones that you don't want. That's the derech melacha. That's the way it is done. However, if derech achila, in the manner that you want to eat, you're taking out the ones that you want and leaving behind the ones that you don't. And this is the most important distinction when it comes to the melacha of borer on Shabbos, because one of them is biblically prohibited and the other one is 100% permitted. Okay, very fine distinction, but it makes all the difference. So let's give an example. You have peanuts. Okay, in a bowl, and assuming that that you won't die from eating those peanuts, you want to eat the peanuts, and they're surrounded by the shells. So can you separate the peanuts from the shells on Shabbos? So the answer is that you can. You can remove the peanuts from the shells and eat them. Or if you have a lot of peanuts mixed together with a lot of shells. So you can take out the peanuts because you want the peanuts. You cannot remove the shells and leave the peanuts behind. This distinction will come up in many, many different contexts and different examples, which, and I will give enough examples that you will both be hungry and annoyed by the time that I'm done. What is derech achila? How do you define derech achila, the manner of eating? Again, that is the ochel from the psolet, where you're taking out the food that you want and you are leaving behind the food that you do not want. There are three conditions under which you can do this. Three conditions must be fulfilled. Number one is called beyad, meaning that you have to do it with your hands. Does that mean literally with your hands? No, it means that you have to do it with an implement that is not specifically meant for borer, for straining, for separating purposes. So, for example, if you have a slotted spoon, that is literally meant for borer purposes. But if you have a spoon, like a regular soup spoon, that is not that's not meant for separation. That's meant for to aid in you eating the soup. So that is not a problem. That is so. So it has had to be with your hands or something that is really an extension of your hands. Number two is miyad, for immediate use, not for some. In Shabbos morning, you're separating, you're opening a can of chickpeas, and we're not going to talk about can opening right now. There are plenty of things that we're not going to get to, perhaps another time, but you open a can of chickpeas to make a salad on Shabbos morning. So, and you do it all, and you do it right, because the third category, the third requirement, as we mentioned, is ochel mitoch psolet. So you take out all the chickpeas and you leave the liquid behind. Okay, but you do it in the morning before you go to shul, and then in another couple of hours you're going to have the salad. That's not the way it works. You have to do it to prepare in the reasonable amount of time it takes to prepare for the meal you're going to have. Now, of course, you could prepare this before Shabbos, and that's not a that's great if you're on top of things. But if you're going to be doing this, you have to do it miyad, for immediate use. Now, immediate use doesn't mean in the next 5 seconds. It means within the next reasonable amount of time that it takes to prepare the meal you're going to have. You'll tell me, wait a minute, I'm having 20 people for lunch. So it takes a long time to prepare for lunch for 20 people. Now, maybe you prepared the entire lunch. That's okay, because the amount miyad is defined as the amount of time it takes to prepare the meal you are about to have. If it took longer, then it'll take. Then miyad is defined as a longer period of time. If it takes, if it's just a small group of people, one or two people, then you have less time. That's the. A lot of this is based on just the perception and the abilities of an average, normal, rational person. Okay, now people are not average, normal, or rational. But leaving all of that aside. That's the way we define it. Now, we're going to analyze each of these. But before we do, each of these requirements, before we do, we have to figure out what borer applies to. We're talking about mixtures. But how do you define a mixture? This is a pretty meta question. We've asked questions like this. How do you define cooking? So these are, how do you define a mixture in halacha? So in halacha, a mixture is two foods mixed together. We'll give you an example of two foods that will, God forbid, that could kill one of my children. You have a mixture of almonds and walnuts in the same bowl, okay? Now, you want the walnuts, and you don't want the almonds. So, based on what you've learned so far, what do? Take out the, right, and in this case, you want the walnuts. So you can take out the walnuts, because as far as you're concerned, the almonds are the psolet. That's what you don't want. The almonds are the refuse that is left behind. You hate almonds, you love walnuts, okay? Now, Let's say that you actually love both of them, but you don't want them to be in the same bowl. You want to separate them into two separate bowls so that you look like a fancy person who serves nuts in two separate bowls. So then what are they? Is one of them an ochel and one of them psolet? No, they are both ochel. Perfectly fine to separate them as you wish into two different bowls. 100% not a problem. All of this, Borer presumes that there is a food that you want and a food that you don't want. And by the way, that could be a food that you want right now and a food that you'll want later. Right now, you're perfectly fine. You want both of them, you just don't want them together because maybe someone else doesn't want them in the same bowl. So you separate, if they're both ochel, that's not considered borer. Now, how else do you define, what else is a mixture? It's two different foods. So for example, you have on a platter, you have turkey and you have chicken, all right? Now, what if you have, it's interesting, he gives the example of two pieces of turkey. Rav Melamed says two pieces of turkey of different sizes. Now, that occurs to me that may be if those are two of the same cut, right? You have a smaller slice of a turkey breast and a larger slice of turkey breast. But if you have turkey breast and thigh and leg, whatever, so those are not the same thing. Right, that is, I think that might be a mixture. I'm not sure about that. But if you have, for example, fruit food that are not mixed, we talk about, you separated it into two piles, right? There, you have a pile of peanuts next to a pile of walnuts. They're not in the, they're in the same, on the same plate. That they're not mixed together. That's not considered, if you take one, that's not considered borer. What about a bowl of fruit? It's common. You have two apples, an orange, and a banana. And you want the banana. So is that when, or, so that's, you take out the banana, that is the way to do it. But is this a mixture at all? So if it's just a few items like this that are easy, that are discrete, that's not a problem. But if you had a fruit salad or you had a huge bowl with many, many different fruits in it, then depending on how many there are, then you, that might be, then you'd have to be, you have to be concerned for borer. Another example, soup. You have soup that has different, you have the liquid and then you have the chicken and the vegetables and so forth. So you want to eat the vegetables first. That's how you do it. Take the vegetable with your spoon and you have them immediately. Now, can you remove the vegetables from the soup because you hate vegetables and you hate chicken and all you want is clear broth? No. You cannot. You cannot do that in the pot. You cannot do that in your soup bowl. That is... Sorry?
Annoying.
Now, does that mean that there, if you, that there is no way to just have the broth? No. Because let's say you are ladling out the soup, right? You have a big pot of soup, and you have a ladle, and you can take out just broth with your ladle. I mean, you are able to take out just broth. So what is the, you want just the broth. What is that for you? Exactly. And what do you leave behind? The psolet, which is perfectly delicious for other people, but that's not what you want. Okay? That is the ochel from the psolet.
So what is the two-word phrase that describes this mixture requirement? That we had, it has to be by hand for immediate use.
Ochel and psolet.
I know.
Right. Biyad, with your... Right. And we'll talk about that some more. Miyad.
Immediate use.
Immediate use.
What's the English phrase for the requirement regarding mixture?
Yeah.
Is the mixture the third thing?
Yes, that's the third thing. I mean, it's the food, what you want has to be taken out and what you don't want left behind.
Okay.
Now, sometimes it happens that you have to remove something that you don't want from it. Like, I'll give you an example. Okay, I was thinking a little bit more common, to use the tired example of the flea in your soup, right? With the waiter and the bad jokes, right? So the flea, or a lemon seed in a vinaigrette. Okay, so you don't want that stuff. So how do you get rid of it? After all, what you're taking out is what you don't want. Does that mean that you have to pour out all the vinaigrette into another container and leave behind the seed? No, but you cannot just take out the seed. So take out a little bit of the vinaigrette along with it, or the soup along with the fly, whatever the case may be. What if it is a bone, like chicken bones or something like that, right? So the easiest solution is to eat around it. You can eat because the chicken, you leave the bones behind, that is what you don't want. And the chicken is what you want. So eat around it. That's not a problem at all. No, we talked about immediate use as defined as prep time for the meal you're about to have. But what about the idea of biyad, with your hand and not an implement? So we mentioned that this refers to an implement that is not an implement that's designed for that purpose. Spoons and forks, again, they're not designed for the purpose of separation. So you can use a spoon for this purpose. Question was raised, you have a salt shaker. And in your salt shaker, you keep rice because the rice prevents the salt from desiccating and clumping together. So now, in principle, every time you shake some salt out onto whatever it is that you're having, the holes in the salt shaker are separating the salt from the rice, or preventing the rice from coming in. No, your salt shakers are fine. Why? Because the holes in the salt shaker are meant to dispense salt, not to prevent the passage of kernels of rice. Very simple. We mentioned bones, right? That's eating around a bone in a steak or ribs or chicken, right? That's eating around them is derech achila. That's the way it's meant to be done. What about things like peels and pits on Shabbos? We talked about the banana. You go to the bowl of fruit and you help yourself to a banana. So now you peel the banana. The banana is, so is that borer? Do you say no? Why not?
It's just like opening a pistachio.
It's okay. Is that okay too?
You're opening it to get to the food, not to. You're not going to peel five bananas. Aside.
Well, if you can't peel one banana, you can't peel five bananas, right? So the answer, which is what you're saying, I think, right, is that is the normal way to eat the food in question. You can also cut bananas without peeling them, but ultimately, if you want to eat the banana, you're going to have to peel the banana. Oranges and so on, right? If you want to eat it, you're going to have to peel it. Now, you'll tell me that, yes, you can also cut oranges into quarters or eighths and eat the orange and leave the peel. But that is fundamentally still perhaps an act of borer because you are eating the orange. Well, you're actually eating the orange and you're leaving the peel behind. But
you wouldn't peel some oranges and make a fruit salad on Shabbos.
You could. But the point is that the reason that you're allowed to do this is it's not a mixture. You're just taking off what you need in order to get at the food, that at the orange.
What about strawberries?
What about them? They're delicious and possibly infested with bugs, but that's a different discussion. Yeah, cutting it off. Oh, because you're leaving. No, that's what you need to do to in order to be able to serve the strawberry. It's the same idea. Yes, some people leave the green part on, but if you don't eat the green part, then you have to cut the green part off. You're allowed to do that. What about for things that are sometimes eaten with the peel, like carrots or cucumbers or apples, right? Any of these things. So there's actually several opinions in the poskim about this, because in principle, you don't need to peel it. So if you're peeling it, maybe that is an act of borer. You're separating, right? And especially because if you use a peeler, that is an implement that is designated for peeling, and if peeling is borer, then you cannot peel anything with a peeler. So I believe it is the Shmirah Shabbos Kilchasa, Rav Neuwirth, quoting Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who says there's a very simple solution. Peel a little bit more. Right? When you peel a cucumber, so you're not just peeling the green, and I'm sure there is an exact botanical term for the green part that is not the green part, right? The peel, right? You peel just a little bit more than that part, and then you're not only taking off the peel, you're taking off a little bit more. You're taking off part of the cucumber itself. And this way, you have both some of the ochel and some of the psolet, and that is perfectly fine, especially if you would or could eat the cucumber with the peel on it. There is certainly room to be lenient on this matter. Borer does not just apply to food, though. Mixtures are defined, right, not just as mixtures of food, but as mixtures of things. So books, game pieces, silverware, pictures, all of these are potentially subject to the prohibition of borer, and all of the rules governing borer apply to these things as well. The criteria is the same. Remove what you want by hand for immediate use or for your immediate need. That's not derech melacha. That's derech achila, and you're not eating in this case, but it's still not the normal manner of sorting. So, for example, you have children who are messy. I do. And the games, their games get mixed up, and they want to play a game. And assuming that the pieces are close together enough that they can actually discern which ones are which and remove them. So they remove all of the pieces from the game that they want to play right now. That's great because they're doing it right away. If an implement exists for this purpose, I'll be the first to buy it because really by hand is the most effective way. And they're taking the ochel, as it were, from the pisolet. You take for your silverware, okay? You are setting the table for Shabbos. Let's say you're setting the table for lunch on Shabbos morning. Let's say, for example, you're setting that table. If you're invited out for dinner, you set your table for lunch on Friday afternoon or Thursday, you're good to go. But you have dinner Friday night, and now you clear the table. You're setting your table for lunch on Shabbos morning. So already it's not miyad, right? This is not for your immediate use. And you have a clump of, silverware, okay? So the first answer is don't do that. If you have a drawer where the silverware is separate, don't clump them all together because then you have a borer problem, right? Because you are not doing this for immediate use. Already, immediately, you're in trouble. So what should you do then? Take out the knives, and put them down. Then take out the spoons and put them. Now, when I say put them down, I don't even mean put them around this place settings, although you can. Put them on the table in a pile. Then put the spoons on the table in a pile. And that way, you don't have any borer issues. But what if you don't do that? So then you're in for a very random table setting operation, right? That's the way to do it. What if, though, you are invited out for lunch, or you're invited out for lunch on Shabbos, so you don't have to worry about it, but you're cleaning up from dinner, and you're washing your dishes, and you're washing your silverware, and now you're washing the spoons, and then so you put them away. How? Any way you want. Why? Because that's the normal way. That's the normal way of doing things. When you're washing individual pieces, you put them away as they've been washed. That's the derech of doing it. It's not a matter of malacha, right? If you were sorting it out industrially, you would be sorting it out into piles. But just putting it away as you go, that's perfectly fine. So that is the malacha of borer. Let's move on to the malacha of dash. That's the malacha of separating the grain kernels from stalks. Doing this with the help of a tool, doing this by hand, is not the usual way of doing it, and therefore, if you do it by hand, you're not transgressing a Torah violation. What is the definition of dash? Separating food from its natural setting. There is a related malacha called mifarek, which means separating one thing from within another thing. What's the best example of this? Juicing, right? Squeezing. Schita. Schita, right? Squeezing. Now, there are many different applications of schita, squeezing your clothes. We're not going to get all those because this is related to the kitchen and nothing else. So the example that the Talmud gives is squeezing olives and pressing, squeezing grapes and pressing olives for the purpose of the juice to make wine or the oil to make oil. The reason these examples are given is that they are worth, that olives and grapes are worth more in their wine and olive oil form than they are in their grape and olive form. So it's in everybody's best interest to be squeezing grapes and olives. So you cannot juice a fruit just for its juice. But if the juice enhances the flavor of another food item, then you can squeeze it directly into or onto that food. What do I mean? Great, excellent example. So you cut up the lemon, squeeze the heck out of that lemon. Now, if you were just using, you just wanted the lemon juice for the purpose of the lemon juice to make a vinaigrette, no. But if you're doing it to enhance your schnitzel, that's perfectly fine, or your salad, or anything else like that. There's even a way to make lemonade from fresh lemons that involves squeezing them, but not directly. What do you do? Onto the sugar, right? Squeeze the lemonade directly onto the sugar so it's absorbed by the sugar. You're using that to enhance the flavor of the beverage you're about to make. That's the way to do it. You can also, yeah. Yeah. No, you have to squeeze it onto the salad. You can't squeeze. Yeah, that's correct.
The seeds.
So yeah, the seeds that we learned how to get rid of the seeds. Interesting question. We talked about eating your orange, right? So now you have the orange and the pit, the seeds. You don't want to eat the seeds, right? So the way to do it, you can't separate the seeds out before you eat them, but you can spit them out after you eat them, right? That's all. If you go to your average middle-aged Israeli man knows how to deal with sunflower seeds in a way that is borer compliant on Shabbos, as evidenced by the large piles that you see on, you know, tables around Shabbos afternoon, right? Because you eat, you put it in, you pop it, you have the sunflower seed, and then that's the way to do it. That's exactly the way to do it. Admittedly repulsive, but that is a cultural judgment, and therefore not fair. Another melacha that comes up in the Shabbos kitchen is the melacha of tochein, which means grinding. Now, after you've gotten your kernel, you've separated everything around, so now you want to make it into flour. So you have to grind it into flour, tochein. Tochein is, it's a creative activity, grinding things, that's prohibited on Shabbos. You can do it if you need to. There are ways you could do it if you need it for food, as long as you employ two shinuyim. Like, how did it used to be that they would grind things? Take, for example, spices. Right? They didn't have these fancy spice grinders that they have, or coffee grinders.
Millstones?
Yeah, or a mortar and pestle. Right? So if you have it, so you can do it with a mortar and pestle, but using something that's not a mortar and something that's not a pestle. So instead of the mortar and pestle, you use the back of your knife and a plate. Okay? Now, that won't do as good a job, but that's two shinuyim. If you use two differences, right, then it's not the normal way of doing it. This is what's called derech achila. You're doing it for eating, but not in the way that it's normally done. Now, this applies to natural foods, but it does not apply to things that have already been ground up. So, for example, if you crumble your matzah into your soup on Pesach, for example, assuming that you eat gebracht, right? So you crumble your matzah into your soup on Pesach. Is that a violation of tochein? No. Why not? Because the matzah is made from wheat that's already been ground up. You're good. There's no double jeopardy. Not a problem. Cookies, cake, none of those things. Your challah, right, has a crumble, right? None of those things are violations of tochein on Shabbos. Not a problem. Now, what is potentially an issue is chopping vegetables into small pieces on Shabbos. According to the majority of Rishonim, there is no problem doing this, unless they are inedible otherwise. What does that mean? You won't eat horseradish unless you have really tiny little pieces of horseradish. So the only way that you'll eat this horseradish is if it's cut up into tiny pieces. You're not crazy enough to bite off a chunk of horseradish root. And if you are, then you are crazy. But that's the only way you're going to eat it. If they are edible raw, then you can serve them and chop them as you wish. However, there are Rishonim who feel that cutting up small pieces, food into natural food, into very small pieces, is a violation of the biblical melacha of tochein. And since this is a machlokes Rishonim on a din de'oraisa, a biblical prohibition, we invoke the principle of what we call safek de'oraisa lechumra. Any doubt on a biblical prohibition, we go toward the stringent and not toward the lenient. So it would appear that we have a real problem if we want to cut our cucumbers up into small pieces on Shabbos. But we are still okay. Why? Because even the most stringent opinion about tochein says that it's fine to do if you're using it right away. So for immediate use, you can do that. So I remember once I was mentoring a person studying for conversion. And one of the questions is before the conversion actually took place. One of the questions this person was asked during one of the sessions leading up was, how do you prepare a salad on Shabbos morning? And this person was expected to know that, you know, if you want to cut up the vegetables, you have to cut it up into small pieces. And I said to the rabbi that was asking the question, like, I think I might have forgotten that myself. Like, I was very surprised that they were, but everybody should know that. So you have to cut up into small pieces for immediate use. That's the way you can do it. Everybody agrees. You can also, if you have food that is mashable, right, like bananas, for example, okay, some kind of puree. So you can do that as long as you're using something that is not a kli hamyuchad lekach, not a utensil that is meant for that, spoon or a fork. I mean, you'll tell me maybe a fork is actually the best thing for it, but since that's not the explicit purpose of the fork, you can use the fork for those purposes.
You can't use a potato masher to get
menu. That's correct.
Just about salad.
Love it. Cutting up vegetables into very small pieces. Now,
is good or bad?
Okay
if it's for immediate use.
Okay.
Now, you're going to ask me, how do you define small pieces? Okay, so this is where you're...
Are you talking about mincing or dicing?
Very good. So, mincing, bad. Dicing, great. Mincing is fine if you're using it immediately. Dicing is always okay, I think, okay? Again, a lot of this involves, despite the fact that it seems a little bit abnormal, it still involves a lot of common sense. Yeah, again, avocados are mashable, right? You want to make guacamole Shabbos morning. So you make it right before lunch. You mash up the avocado with a fork. You squeeze the lemon or lime in right away for a meat, right? Into the guacamole, and then you're good to go. Whatever else you want to add to it, you chop up the onion. Again, I'm not presuming anybody's recipe, but get into very fine pieces. You could use that, again, for immediate use, and whatever other wonderful ingredients, jalapenos and so forth, all good for immediate use. That's actually a very good illustration. Thank you. Sorry? Why you cannot?
Yeah.
I said you could.
No.
She's been told that she's
been told. Oh, you've been told. There you go. There is. Okay, good. So this is a machlokas between people that make Israeli salad as to whether they like the pieces very big or like the pieces very, very small. So if you are the type of person who likes very tiny pieces of Israeli salad, then you have to make it right away, right? But if you like big chunks, so then it's not, you can make your Israeli salad earlier. Because that's not the issue, right? The issue is small pieces. Tochein, right, grinding, is not really, you can't say that if you're cutting the cucumber up into 8 or 9 pieces, that's considered to be grinding, right? One last melacha, and that is the melacha of lash. Lash means kneading. After you've ground up the wheat into flour, now you've got to turn it into dough. So lash, it means it's kneading. You're forming dough from flour and water, or mixing any liquid with any solid to form a dough or a thick clump of thing. I don't even know how else. Clump of thing. That's paste. Yeah, glop, mush, whatever. So now, first of all, literally, right, you cannot pour water onto flour on Shabbos, right? That's the very beginning of the melacha of lash. And if you do, you cannot shape it. That's prohibited. What you're doing is, essentially, lash is, You're forming something new with characteristics that are not the same as its component parts. Flour, water, dough. The Torah prohibition of lash is limited to a thick mixture, but midrabanan, it is also prohibited as far, with regard to a loose mixture as well. We're talking minimal quantities, like if it dissolves, then and the liquid retains its original form, like dissolving like salt, and that's not considered to be lush. Like forming a mixture that is loose, that's not the same as still having a liquid with something in suspension. Like coffee, for example, right? Coffee crystals. That's not a problem of lush because you started with a liquid and you're ending up with a liquid, and assuming that you are Bishul compliant, then you're fine. Okay? Where do you come up with, where does lush come up? Lush comes up, for example, if you're adding liquid to something that is also liquidy and it's forming a mixture, but that liquid is not entirely liquid. So I'll give you an example. You want to make a sauce from peanut butter. Okay, you want to thin out peanut butter to make some kind of Asian sauce, or tahina from tahini paste. Okay, where you add water to it. Now, tahina is interesting because if you make tahina at home, you know that when you add water or some liquid to it, something very interesting happens. Anybody know? Sorry? It thickens before it thins out, right? So you have the full range, the drama of the tahina experience. Really, as far as the malacha of lush is concerned. When you start out, right, so tahina, even most tahina, you could get like solid paste, that's a different discussion, but if you have liquid tahina, that's just the sesame seeds and the oil, okay? So you're adding liquid to a liquid. Adding liquid to a liquid is not considered dash. In principle, there are those who say you can't do this because you're actually thickening it up. But in practice, the halacha follows those who are lenient, and not just because tahina is delicious, but because because the end result is going to still be something that is reasonably liquidy. Now, some people prefer their tahina a little bit thicker, or tahina sometimes, if you let it sit, it thickens. But fundamentally, right, what you're doing is you're still creating a loose mixture. Not only that, you don't even have to worry about that. Why? Because we mentioned that because tochein does not, all these melachos, right, these sesame seeds were ground and mixed before Shabbos into this tahina paste or suspension, and according to many, the prohibition no longer applies. So if you really, it's perfectly fine, add water to tahina. If you really want to get around all of this, then the way to do it is to do it with a shinui. I don't know exactly what do it in a different manner than you normally would. I don't know if that means like what, put the spoon in your mouth or something like that, but it's not really necessary for the reasons outlined above, again, because it is fundamentally, you're creating a loose mixture from something that was a liquid before. These are, this is basically the melacha of lash. There are food that has been mashed is not subject to the prohibition of lush because it's already been mashed and softened. So if you are mixing your guacamole, right, or something else of that nature, right, it's already been mashed and softened. So if it's been mashed and softened, kneading or mixing it does not fundamentally change it. So if you have dish of like meat and potatoes and cholent, for example, meat and potatoes and barley that have fallen apart. So you can even add water to that in order to create one mass of food if it's fallen apart. You can add gravy to mashed potatoes and mix them together because the potatoes have already been mashed. So there's no prohibition of lush when you're mixing it together. Not only that, if you have something that you made, a mixture you made before Shabbos, and then some liquid separates from it on Shabbos, you put it in the you make baba ganoush before, or eggplant salad before Shabbos, you put it in the fridge, the oil separates the top. Can you mix it together on Shabbos? Yeah, because the eggplants are, sorry?
Chilling.
Again, another great example, excellent, right, exactly, because it's been, but I'm talking about specifically mashed things. The eggplant has been mashed. You have natural peanut butter, or your tahina, right? Your tahina, if you have natural tahina, right, so the sesame separates in the bottom and the oil's on the top, you can separate that together because it's already been pulverized, mashed, whatever you want to call it. So these are some of the issues as far as lush is concerned. There is one more area that seems to come up, people ask about, and this is actually not one of the other malachas. We'll talk about briefly the malacha of kotev, of writing on Shabbos. Birthday cakes. This is a very common question. Tom Thumb already knows that they make Shabbos compliant birthday cakes, right? You can have the writing on the plastic thing, and then you put that on the cake, and they know from the, they think we're insane, but they know about this stuff. So how do you navigate it? Can you do this, right? Or is this, let me phrase it, is that necessary? So you cannot write letters or draw pictures on a cake using candy or frosting on Shabbos. Right, that is a violation of the. This is not a biblical prohibition. This is the rabbinic prohibition of kotev. Why is it not a biblical prohibition? The biblical definition of kotev is writing two letters that are permanent or long lasting. And since if your cake is any good, it's not going to last for a long time. That's not the biblical prohibition. What if your cake has letters or pictures? Right now that's a thing. Very fancy cakes, they have pictures on them. So can you cut that on Shabbos? You cannot cut on the letters. You can cut between the letters. Now, how do you define between the letters, especially if they're connected? So I think the answer is that as long as you can, if you're cutting up pieces and there's a letter on each piece, so the fact that there's a piece that connects one letter to that doesn't count. But if you're cutting through the A, that's not okay. What about, one thing. You have biscuits that have writing stamped into them. Oreo cookies or Osem biscuits or all those kinds of things, right? Can you eat those on Shabbos if you're actually biting into letters on Shabbos? Absolutely yes, because that's not an addition on top of the food. That is part of the food, and they're insignificant, right? You would eat this even if it didn't have the letters on it, right? You might not get the cake if it didn't have, because it would have to be really good birthday cake for you to eat it if it didn't have the nice lettering on it, right? So the letters are significant, but in this case, in the case of the Oreos or whatever, the letters are insignificant relative to the food itself. Yeah, Michelle, did I?
I'm sorry, I missed it. What is the prohibition?
Kotev, right? Kotev, or more appropriately, mochek, right? Because you're actually erasing. Yeah. You're asking that question now.
I'm sorry, I'm
Everything is a stretch, right? If you want to really look at it from 30,000 feet, everything is a stretch. And this is actually a great way to conclude, right? If you are accepting the system and the premise that we're doing things differently on Shabbos, and they have to be very different, such that it doesn't even remotely resemble the original intent of the malacha, then maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but that's part of the system designed to fundamentally change the way we do things on Shabbos. So in this case, writing is the malacha of kotev, cutting is the malacha of erasing. So, and if you think about it, is it really a stretch? I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, on the Sunday morning, it was in September, and it was the morning of the massive morning minyan. And it happened to also be either the day of or the day after my English birthday. And Jessica surprised me in a very lovely way and she co-conspired with Aaron Lazarus to have a cake served as part of the breakfast following the massive morning meeting. And so it said, "Happy birthday, Rabbi Rakovsky." It was very easy. So someone went in and cut up into the R of the name Rakovsky. So it said, it either said Abbi Rakovsky or Rabbi Akovsky, okay? So that's not my last name or my title, I guess, right? That's erasing, right? That's not the name anymore. It happened to be that it was Shaya who did it. so that's okay, right? But if you think about it, right, once you cut out the letter, then that's not the word or the name anymore. So it's not such a stretch to say that that is related to erasing on Shabbos, I think, right?
This wasn't Shabbos.
Sorry?
This wasn't Shabbos.
No, but I'm giving the example, right. So this time it was just retroactively cute. If it had been Shabbos, it would also have been potentially Aser. But maybe not, because if they cut, you know, through the letters. That's why it's only an Isser Derabanan, right? Midirabanan, the Gezeira was that even impermanent writing is, if you write or if you erase impermanent writing, that's still the violation on Shabbos, okay? It's certainly not a biblical violation. A biblical violation is writing two letters that endure, okay? But writing two letters that won't, that was decreed as a way of preserving, putting a fence around the original prohibition. So you want to tell me that taking off a little bit of frosting seems to you to be a little bit of a stretch. So I'm telling you that I think it really is, and it does look like erasing. Like that's what it is. In many ways, that's what it is. We could go back and forth about this, but that's my take. So these are, I think, some of the more common questions that come up, or common malachos that come up in the Shabbos kitchen. Yeah. Ah, sure. Extra? No. If you have extra left over, that's fine. If you make a lot and you only serve some, that's okay. You only find that you need some of it, that's okay. If they were just making it for Howard for later on, that would be problematic. But if they make a lot for one time and they decide to serve only some of it, that's not a problem.
Actually, they give them 10, but that's
I understand. And that's
it.
Thank you, everybody, so much for coming. Stay tuned for other exciting educational offerings. And I really, really appreciate that you came. And I hope that you learned that you benefited as well.
Thank you.